Welcome to Education Currents, a show designed to provide educational news and commentary from a Christian worldview. The greatest resource any community has is its children. And by providing for them the best possible education, we are providing for ourselves and future generations. Join us as we explore the latest social and political issues surrounding education today.
Welcome, welcome. I'm Dr. Rose Gamblin.
And I'm Dr. Richard Tooley.
And we have been debating what to call this subject. We've thought, is less more? Is more less? Is more less? Is more more? Is less or, more? What yeah. are we calling this show?
Well, that's the difficult thing. I think it's the debate on whether more or less time in the classroom makes sense.
And some would say if you, as a teacher, talk more, is the student learning more? Or if the teacher talks less, is the and lets the student talk more, is the student learning more, or writing more, or reading more, or working on activities? So who is interested? Who should be interested in this topic?
Actually, the nation should be interested in this topic. The United States has felt for a long time that it's been falling behind other nations in how well their students are doing academically. And the impact to that is the future of the country, the technological growth, its capacity to be competitive in a an increasingly globalized environment. You know, we're talking about world now where other nations, emerging nations, are coming out with technology and products that compete with the United States. When the United States was an industrial nation back in the 60s and 50s and 40s and 30s, it was very, very hard to compete with it because it was on the cusp of new technology. It was on the cusp of, it could produce anything that needed to be produced, and it did. And the American car was the dream car. And then when the 70s hit, the decline of the automotive industry was noticeable because all of a sudden these little cars that everyone laughed at that had dinner plate-sized wheels and plastic door handles that fell off in your hand, called Hondas,
yes,
started emerging as the number one car.
That really shocked us, didn't it?
Yes, and so you began to see industry leaving this country, and now the question comes, after the Industrial Revolution, after the Industrial Age, and after the Information Age, where does a country go to remain as a competitive country so that it doesn't slide backwards? How does it keep its competitive edge? And it has to do with the future generations, the students that are coming up that are going to be into the workforce, and what type of a student are they going to be? What type of a worker are they going to be?
And that takes you to that classroom, or it takes you to that table where the child is learning, and you realize that so much hinges on that. It's pretty awesome when you think about it. Teachers might feel like their role in life isn't too glamorous, but really that's where it's at.
Yes. When you talk about the future of this country, you need to be talking about preschool, first grade, second grade, third grade, fundamental years in setting the foundation of learning for students. And then you need to be talking about fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth, building on what you built in the first years. Ninth, 10th, 11th, and 12th, preparing students for either going into industry or going on into college, preparing students to take their place in a competitive world in technology or academics or thought-based careers, that really all together, when you look at them all together, describe what the nation is going to be for years into the future. It's a long, what looks like a long process that moves through rather rapidly. And if you aren't with it on those, your nation will suffer.
So when we say less is more, we're actually talking about a paradigm shift in how we deliver instruction, from where the teacher would plan great lectures and deliver great lectures and then be so shocked to find out that nothing had been really retained with the students.
Yeah, what you look at oftentimes is, this gets to be the political football of the century. How do you address the quality of learning? So we say the United States is slipping behind some of the other nations in terms of its students' ability to test on an equal level with other nations. And so the question becomes in many minds of politicians, bless their hearts, that this should be a rather simple approach. And some of the approaches that we've had is, okay, let us create incentives for the school systems that do best. Or let us reward teachers who teach better than other teachers. So we're looking for something simple to do. And so then one of the ideas now that is being kicked around, and it's not new, but it's getting a resurgence, is there a correlation between the amount of time a student spends in the classroom and how well they learn, or how more advanced they can become, especially in the hard sciences and in curriculum that they need to have? There's a huge debate over that. The one side says, yes, it is. We are. If you can keep students in for 8 hours a day as opposed to 6 hours a day, we have been able to prove that this is successful. And then there's other research that says, no, you can't prove it's successful. Probably the answer is yes and no.
Yeah, because when you're basing everything on a standard that's being tested, then it comes to how well that student can take the test, and it doesn't really measure the depth of knowledge that that student might have around that question.
Yeah, there's many, many factors that aren't necessarily related to time in the classroom but are important. For instance, if you take students and you were to put them in a classroom for 8 hours a day as opposed to 6 hours a day, and the classroom instruction method was lecture, your outcome could be significantly different from a classroom that was 6 hours a day and your instruction method was some mix of lecture and interaction. So other factors play into this. It's not as simple of a picture as just saying, well, let's increase the number of hours in the classroom that a student spends. Now, oftentimes the people here in the United States point toward Asia as being the place that we really need to look at and see how they're doing. There are fundamental differences in the approach that Asia takes to what the United States or the Western world takes. For example, in China and in Taiwan, both, they have two tests that are given in the senior years of these students. One test is given in the fall and one is given in the spring. You need to score really high in one of the two tests, either one. They're given twice, so if you do bad in one, go get the other one. If you do good, hang on to it and don't do the other one. But these tests are comprehensive tests. So the test score determines which university you can get into, or if you're going to be in the university at all. So if your test score is really, really high, you get into the more prestigious universities. If your test score gets up into the medium high, like in the 600 or 700 range, out of 1,000, you can end up in a reasonably good school. When you get towards that 500 mark, watch out. And if you drop below the 500 mark, you might as well plan on a career that does not include academics. And it's the tests that count. So what happens in a school year, it gets rather interesting. What happens in a school year is if a student scores well on the first semester, you may never see that student in the classroom again for the remainder of their senior year. It doesn't matter whether they've finished their coursework or not. If they score high on that test, that's what counts. Now, the tests are given, like I said, in the beginning, in the middle. So the test in the spring is somewhere in March. If someone passes that test in March, you will not see them throughout the rest of the year. If they score high, you're not going to see that student in the classroom. And it also shapes how students go about learning, for the most part. The test is what's important. The test is everything. If you don't pass that test, you're not going to the university. So you may fool around and do whatever you want to through the first 2 or 3 years of high school, but you will definitely spend time preparing for that test if you want something other than a manual labor job. So that's different. We're not talking about a real holistic learning process here. We're talking about a process that is designed to filter out those people who are able to use a certain learning style to pass a certain type of test.
Well, we have to take a break right here. We're talking about learning, and I love kind of how the title is less more. Less is more. Or is more more. We'll be right back. You've been listening to Education Currents. Be sure and like us on our Education Currents Facebook page and consider joining MRG Media in this radio ministry. You can call us anytime at 301-824-3162. That's 301-824-3162. Or write to MRG Media at P.O. Box 413, Smithsburg, Maryland, 21783. That's P.O. Box 413, Smithsburg, Maryland, 21783. Welcome back. I'm Dr. Rose Gamblin.
And I'm Dr. Richard Tooley.
And we are throwing around this phrase. You know, I first heard this phrase, I think it was in 1998, when my main professor in my PhD program threw it out, that less is more. I mean, he threw it out just like that. Less is more. And I just stopped and I thought, when is less more?
Yeah, and that interesting because you have that on multiple levels. Now, in the first half, we were talking about spending more time in classroom. And one of the things that we mentioned was the idea of lecture versus interaction. And it's interesting in different cultures, different things. Now, lecture has been the main method for years, but now they're changing. You know, we don't want as much lecture. We want more interaction.
Well, we know from research that inquiry-based, project-based learning, the students exponentially retain, and if we count the retaining as part of learning, yeah, they learn more than when they're just told something. It's just lecture is by far inferior to the student in the Western culture. Now, I do not know. I have not had any experience in the Eastern cultures, but you have.
Yes, and there, lecture is the predominant way of educating. And to the point that when you do work for interaction, it's a much more difficult process to get there. And it's been fascinating for me. Now, it shifts. It's kind of shifts. If you start younger, you're going to get students who are going to interact.
Well, share with us one of your first experiences where you tried to maybe do a little bit of inquiry-based learning, you know, threw out a question and decided on a project. What kind of resistance did you face?
I heard crickets.
Crickets?
Yeah. Nothing else.
Oh. Student, they just stared at you?
Pretty much. It's interesting. It happens different at different levels. Now, in the elementary level or in the middle school level, students tend to have a little bit less respect for the teacher at that point. They'll talk over the teacher. They'll talk around the teacher. They won't even talk to the subject that the teacher's talking on a lot. As they age, that seems to recede, and a reticence to talk begins to come in, where they get quieter and quieter and quieter, and they get into the collegiate level and they shut up.
Yeah, well, even on now, middle school's mainly where I've been all my life. It seemed like that if I was talking, of course I demand them to be quiet, but if I just was telling them a story or whatever to express a point, I could see their minds quickly working to tell me a story back, you know, and I would realize that the whole class is going to be eaten up with everybody telling their stories, you know, so I quickly would say, we're not going to have any stories now, we just want questions. But then when I changed it around where I asked questions right off the bat, sometimes it would get totally quiet because I totally reversed it. Now they were supposed to come up with a story, and the pressure was on them to do so, and it was like, deer in the headlights or something like that. So I want to go back to your story. So you started with, what was your first question or your first project that you threw out for them to do?
Well, you know, you would be asking some of the first things I was doing. I'm dealing with students who are learning English. I wanted to know the meaning of a word. So I would throw out a word and I would say, does anybody know the meaning of this word? Like, do you know what it means when we say incompetent, for example? Do you understand the word incompetent? Who can tell me the meaning of the word incompetent? I could have sat there for the entire hour waiting for someone to raise their hand because they weren't going to talk. They weren't going to say anything. No one was going to say anything.
Now, do you think, though, even though they weren't going to talk, do you think they were really, that their brains were really churning as they were trying to think what this might mean or what you might be asking? I mean, could you see the wheels turning? Did you have a sense that their brains were working really hard?
Well, their cell phones were working hard. I'm teaching, this is English as a second language in some of these classes. And so when I throw out the word incompetent, the first thing that you see them do is turn to their cell phone, plug in the word incompetent, which they can spell very easy and say very easy, but have absolutely no idea of what it means. Now they get to translate in Chinese. So they understand the word now, but they're not going to talk. So to counteract that, I'm working on re-engineering their thought processes, and I can't tell you I'm going to be successful at it yet, but we'll see.
So how does that re-engineering look?
That re-engineering looks like specificity. Mm. So if I want to know what the meaning of the word incompetent is, at the risk of making a student lose face, I will ask by their name, do you know the meaning of this word? So I will pick out students. Never
ask. And just let them say, yes, I know the meaning, or no, I do not know the meaning.
I want them to give me the definition.
And then they read it from their cell phone?
Some of them, most of them don't want you to know they're reading from their cell phone.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe you were actually using that.
I did initially. The problem is the cell phone becomes a crutch.
Yes.
When you give them a translator, it becomes a crutch. And so they do not immerse themselves in learning anything. They rely on that crutch to get the answer to it. So initially I wanted that. But, you know, I'm battling on two fronts here. On one front, I want them to move away from a lecture-based learning system into an interactive learning system. Culturally, lecture-based is what it is.
Yeah.
And anybody, I don't care what culture it is, anybody knows that in a lecture-based system, it is very easy to detach oneself from the learning process. Mm-hmm. And it will happen to anybody, even in the most interesting lecture, if that person is having a rough day, didn't get enough sleep, or any other factors, they will disengage, become very quiet, and be able to sit there for the entire class and not hear a word that you say. So I'm trying to move away from that. But when we're talking here about is more less or less more, could you take in a classroom, for example, of elementary school or secondary school and say, or elementary and middle school and say, okay, kids, we're going to increase the day length from 6 hours to 8 hours, and let's see if we can increase our scores. And there's research that says, yes, you can. Now, over in the Asian countries, they do have very long days. It's up to 10 hours for some of them. The studies show that in actual teaching, the United States has more hours of teaching hours than most of those countries have. But the time that the students are spending in school are significantly longer. Some of the arguments for long hours is that if you have long hours, don't send homework home, control it more, and have better classroom management, and you're going to get more learning. Some results show that, I mean, one of my reads said 10% increase in the classroom time equals 2% increase in learning capacity. It's greater. So there's a cost to it. And I just have a real issue with knowing that that's the only factor that drives this. You know, for instance, we've talked now about lecture versus interactive learning. And when it depends, I guess, on the goal of the country and of the people and of the school. We see the difference, for instance, between China students and Taiwan students when we are working with words and language. If I put out a vocabulary list of words, typically the Chinese students will memorize that. They'll have that thing memorized right down. They will know every one of those words. They may not be able to tell you what they mean, but they'll be able to pronounce them, spell them, and tell you them word for word all the way down. Taiwanese students are likely going to be saying, why do you want me to learn this list?
Mm-hmm.
So their approach is different. So you have to approach it. Now, with the Chinese students, if I approach it with the why, they don't care about the why. It's the list, and let me memorize the list. So if you think about test taking, an awful lot of test taking is lists.
Mm-hmm.
If you memorize the lists, you can take good tests. But you may not know anything. I have students, when I first started teaching there, I had students who could read to me in perfect English, whole paragraphs of material, and absolutely not know what they read. So they had learned the phonetics, they had learned letter combinations, they had learned syntax, punctuation, and they could read beautifully, but they had no idea of what they were reading. So there was no meaning attached to that. And to be able to overcome that is pretty interesting. Now, can we or do we achieve the same thing in this country only differently? If we take students and put students into a classroom, can we have those students be loaded with knowledge that absolutely lacks meaning?
Yes, and I think as we wind the show to a conclusion, maybe less is more means that, rather than having students do a lot of rote work and memorizing lists, we want them to have a well-developed sense of curiosity, a love for learning, and a love for putting meaning to not only their lives, but the message that they carry to others.
And just to throw out one thing that's rather interesting, when they're looking at this time, how much time is spent in the classroom, all of those issues, the issues that they're facing, when it comes down to the standardized testing scores, the issue is never with the private schools. The issue is with the public schools.
Mm-hmm.
The private schools all seem to be testing out fine. Is this because they have a better socioeconomic group that's going to those schools? Or is it because there's a different process in the private schools that's being used?
Yes, and I think it really does boil down to that holistic approach of the spiritual, mental, and physical, that it's the whole child. Anyway, we have to end the show, but is less more? I think less is more. Less is more. Well, we have one last thing to say, and that is
keep learning.
You have been listening to Education Current, a production of MRG Media Ministries. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.